It is episode 15 of the College Tribe podcast, brought to you by ESPN Pensacola. I'm your host, Austin Price. You can listen to ESPN Pensacola on 99.1 FM, 1330 AM, or on your ESPN Pensacola mobile app. And you can find this episode of the College Tribe and previous on our local podcast page at ESPNPensacola.com. All righty. Diving right in, head first, right into the deep end, hopefully not shallow. Looking at the top 15, as I said, I think I mentioned this last week. When it comes to the college football playoff rankings, not only are we doing episodes on Wednesday nights now, but we're covering the top 15 because it's a 12-team bracket. Boise State's in that conversation, so they would get the group of five bid, so we don't really have to look too far beyond it. But then we'll look at the top 15, nice round number, just a bit of the teams floating around outside looking in. Right? All right. Here we go. Number one, Oregon. Number two, Ohio State. Number three, Texas. Number four, Penn State. Number five, Indiana. Ugh, put Indiana ahead of Penn State. I already touched on why. Indiana hasn't struggled as much as Penn State has, and Indiana doesn't have a loss. I said it before, and I'll say it now. If Indiana, even if they lose to Ohio State, if they lose close, they need to be ranked ahead of Penn State. Because then Indiana will have just as many losses, but they will have a close road loss, while Penn State has a close home loss to the same opponent. And then when you look at how they've played their competition, come on. Anyway, number four, Penn State, number five, Indiana. That rounds out your top five. Following them are Notre Dame, Alabama, Miami, Ole Miss, and Georgia. That's your top 10. Then number 11, Tennessee. Number 12, Boise State. Number 13, SMU. Number 14, BYU. And number 15, Texas A&M. Listen to those names. Those are significant. All righty. So first takeaway. The first thing I noticed was that Alabama jumped Miami this week. Now, if you were listening last week, first of all, thank you. Second of all, I can get behind this move. I talked about it last week. Alabama being higher than Miami. I was kind of surprised that the one-loss Canes, who have beaten no one and have struggled in multiple games, were still above an Alabama team that had crushed LSU on the road and had already beaten Georgia. It's like you got these wins over ranked opponents, and they're nice-looking wins. I don't know how you don't justify putting Alabama ahead of Miami, especially with this SEC bias we're always hearing about. But now Alabama's ahead of Miami. So I refuse to believe that there was anything in particular from this last weekend that justified this move being made now. Alabama played Mercer. I refuse to believe that a 52-7 win over Mercer just wowed you so much that, yes, that is what puts Alabama ahead of Mercer. I refuse to believe that. And it's literally impossible for Miami to look worse in a bye week. If anyone was going to do it in the top 10, it would probably be them, but it's impossible. So I don't understand why this week, after beating Mercer, people are like, yes, Alabama, they've proven themselves, put them ahead of those darn Canes. Don't get it. Don't really care. It's just an observation I made. I think, in all honesty, the committee probably thought in retrospect, Alabama should probably be ahead of Miami. And then they just went back and fixed it. That's what I think they did. They are human, after all, because we know they commit human errors. We know they're flawed. Moving on here, this is perhaps the biggest head scratcher in both my eyes and those of everyone else who was looking at these polls. BYU dropped below SMU. Now, this wouldn't be a huge shock, except BYU beat SMU. And you may be thinking, oh, well, Austin, you know, who cares, right? Well, I care because the committee, I've applauded them for seemingly having a pretty consistent dedication to recognize head-to-head results. I mean, heck, they just did so again. If you didn't hear in the top 15, Tennessee is now below Georgia because Georgia beat Tennessee by two scores. So down goes Tennessee. They've been rather consistent with that. It's just about the only thing you can be consistent with, and they've done it for about 100% success until now. So I don't know what the sudden switch up is. My first thought was that this was done in an attempt to kind of make an example of the Cougars due to their weak resume, but it doesn't matter how weak their resume is. It doesn't change the fact that they beat the Mustangs in Dallas. Also, it's not exactly like SMU's renowned for their strength of schedule either. I mean, you know, let's not sit here and act like SMU's playing top 10 teams every week. I mean, come on. They both got weak resumes here. BYU's, I think, is actually stronger than SMU's if you want to get technical. And then you have the head-to-head road win. Therefore, the only logical conclusion I can come to is that the committee believes BYU's win over SMU has since been outweighed by what the two teams have done since then. That's all I can assume. This is an argument we heard increasingly often late last season in regards to Texas beating Alabama by 10 in Tuscaloosa. You remember that nonsense? Oh, well, that was so long ago, so let's just pretend it didn't happen. That's what Alabama fans tried to tell you. They wanted you to completely ignore that Texas went into Tuscaloosa and won by 10 points. And the committee didn't seem to feed into that mindset, and thank goodness they didn't, at least when it comes to the top four seedings themselves. But that's the only thing I can imagine now. I can only imagine that they're doing so now. Why else would BYU be behind SMU? I think this is their way of saying, hey, listen, since then, since you beat SMU by like a field goal in Dallas, we think SMU has been better and has been more deserving of the higher rank than you. That is what we think. It's a controversial thought process, but it's one that apparently some imbeciles out there tried to believe and instill on the masses. So either way, it's ridiculous, but at least we're seeing it early. If you're a BYU fan and you're upset, don't worry. It's not the end of the world. You got a couple of weeks left. This can be undone. Okay, you have room, and we'll find out just how much of a capability you have to undo that drop in a little bit, because you have one of the bigger games this weekend, but we'll touch on that later. Those are really the only complaints I had in the top 15. My only gripe outside of the top 15 is with Missouri. And I believe I've asked this before. What in the world are you still ranked for? My God, did three quarters of the committee go to this school or something? Their best win is, get this, their best win is at home by 3 in double overtime over a Vanderbilt team that is now 6-4. As for how they've done against their three opponents that are currently ranked, not only have they gone 0-3, they have been outscored by a total of 109-40. So you don't have anything in your win column. And you have been outscored by 70 points against your three ranked opponents. And in spite of all of it, you are still 23rd in the nation. Do you know what that means? Missouri's not just ranked, they're 23rd. Do you know what that means? That means that they didn't drop a single spot after choking against a low-ranked, three-loss Gamecocks team. That is unbelievable. I understand and I agree that there are multiple teams on the lower end of the rankings that we can question the legitimacy of. I do. I get that. But Mizzou is by far the most egregious of the bunch at this point, especially. I mean, geez, Elijah Drinkwitz said that their playoff hopes were still alive after they got that struggle win over OU. OU's 5-5 right now, by the way. And I guess he was right. I mean, goodness gracious, if Mizzou was simply able to get on the board against Bama a few weeks back, who knows? They might be in the top 8 right now. I just can't wrap my head around that. Speaking of Bama, I don't even think we can say that these guys are ranked to beef up Bama's resume. Sometimes you'll see that. You'll see teams that are a bit more questionably ranked, and it's like, well, what does this team have that makes them so important to be ranked? And you'll see that Bama killed them a few weeks back or a couple months back, and you're like, ah, there it is. But I don't even see that here. The Tide have a win over Georgia that weighs significantly more than this. Not only that, but no one seems to be questioning how high Bama's ranked. No one's looking at Bama saying, what are you doing at 7th? Nobody's asking that. I'm not asking that. And I am one of the most scrutinizing when it comes to the Crimson Tide. So I don't think that's even a justifiable reason either. So when you have a name like Kansas State that is sitting on rank today, the act of insisting on keeping a number next to Mizzou is nothing short of irredeemable. For context, I bring up Kansas State because get this. They have the same record as Missouri, 7-3. And while K-State lost to an unranked Houston, and while that means they fell to one less currently ranked team than Missouri, get this. They've made up for it by beating two teams that are currently in the top 20, Tulane and Colorado. And they beat them both on the road. So why aren't they ranked instead? K-State beat Tulane and Colorado, two teams that are in the top 20 today. And Colorado has a playoff path. You beat them both on the road. And two of your three losses are to ranked teams. And your losses are more competitive than Missouri's overall, I believe, numerically, as far as how much you lost by. And you're not ranked today, but Missouri is. Mind you, K-State's losses are to BYU, top 15 team, Houston, and most recently, Arizona State. Arizona State's now 21st in the country. But you're not ranked, Missouri is. Missouri can lose to a three-loss South Carolina, get their third loss of the season, and not move a spot. They didn't drop a spot. But K-State, oh, get those suckers out of here. Oh, you can't make sense of it. You cannot make sense of that. Sickening. Anyway, moving on before I have an aneurysm. Looking at Floridian representation here. Well, not quite Floridian. I want to stay local, but I want to give love to someone who's not in the Sunshine State. I want to give some love to the South Alabama Jaguars. They're not Floridian, but Mobile is still rather local here. They just went on the road and beat a previously one-loss Louisiana that was fixing to look for some love in the CFP top 25, so that's a big win for them. The colossal win makes them 5-5. So you know what? We'll try to keep an eye on them as they reach for a bowl. I think they've earned that. They should be able to grab it, too, because this weekend they're on the road against a 1-9 Southern Miss. The Golden Eagles have scored just 21 points over their last three games. I believe that a combined 21. That's it. So South Alabama, they're looking pretty good to have a winning record after this Saturday and clinch a bowl game. So happy for the Jags. Before we continue with some of the Sunshine State representation, I do want to remind you that you can listen to the College Try podcast on ESPN Pensacola, on our local podcast page at ESPNPensacola.com, that is. And ESPN Pensacola itself, you can tune in at 99.1 FM, 1330 AM, and on our ESPN Pensacola mobile app. Alrighty, we'll start with Miami. They're coming off a bye, one of a few Florida teams coming off a bye. They're hosting the Wake Forest Demon Deacons. Yes! This is my wheelhouse. I never get to talk about those guys. As you know, Austin Price here is a Wake Forest fan. Yeah. Well, if anything were to give the Canes trouble here, I'm just going to cut straight to the chase. It would be that the Deacs offense can sometimes put up some points, and I know Miami's defense hasn't been great. So maybe we see Wake score a bit. But with how Miami's offense is all the better and Wake's defense is all the worse. I mean, genuinely, it's the worst. I say this seriously. The 2024 Wake Forest Demon Deacons have a defense that is worse than any defense I have ever watched in my years of watching football. I am talking high school. I am talking collegiate. I am talking professional. I have never seen a defense that bad. Don't believe me? Watch them this weekend. You'll get quite a laugh. Anyway, when you consider all this, I can't imagine the Canes suffer a second upset here. Simply because Wake will be incapable of keeping up. So I think Wake's going to score maybe a handful of points, and the Hurricanes will score a wagon's worth. And then that brings us to the Gators. I don't care, I'm going to say it. The Gators are for real. They're not that good, but they are formidable, all things considered. They just beat LSU by double digits. Okay, they won that game, what, 27-16? They're back in the swamp to host a sometimes inconsistent Ole Miss squad, and this is not even going to be a whole week before the Egg Bowl. I believe the Egg Bowl is Black Friday. I thought it was on Thanksgiving, but I believe it's Black Friday this year. Those circumstances give this matchup the vibe of a trap game and a half. You got to go to the swamp. The Gators are rolling. They're looking to go bowling, looking to get a winning record this late in the year. That was so unexpected of them. You got to go to their turf right before one of the most hate-filled rivalries in college football, the Egg Bowl? Oh, man. That is trap game. Ole Miss is good. Their offense is good. And they certainly have what it takes to win the game. I think they very well could. And I think they should be favored here. But wow, do not sleep on the Gators. If you're Ole Miss, if you're an Ole Miss fan, you gotta be biting your nails over that one. Man, what a turn of the page here. That brings us to FSU in Tallahassee. Fresh off a bye week. Facing 1-10 Charleston Southern. The Seminoles are now the only team in Division I. That means FBS, FCS. They are the only team of 263 to have not exceeded 21 points in a game this year. I think the only other team, if I remember the story correctly, the only other team was Mississippi Valley State. They just beat FAMU. I think the score was 24-21. So they've officially broken 21 points. They have let me rephrase. They have exceeded 21 points. Florida State hasn't, and their offense has only gotten worse and worse. They're averaging under 14 points a game on the season. You host a 1-10 Charleston Southern coming off a bye. You have to be able to win that and put up a lot of points, especially with Norvell getting rid of his OC and wide receiver coach, because he's desperate to prove, once again, we've touched on this before, he's desperate to prove, hey, I'm not the problem. If you can't prove that against Charleston Southern, I don't know what to tell you, my man. I guess pack your bags because it's only a matter of time before you're grabbing them and heading to the bus stop. UCF, 4-6, well-rested, coming off a bye. They're headed into Morgantown to take on a 5-5 West Virginia. And I got to tell you, that's one that could go either way. That's one that could go either way. UCF and West Virginia both showing some potential coming into this game. But West Virginia at home, battling for a bowl. Whew, that's pretty tough for UCF to overcome. USF, one win away from going bowling themselves after blowing out Charlotte. They blew them out even worse than I thought they would. I think I had the Bulls winning by like 16. They won by over 20, if I'm not mistaken. I think I had them winning by 15, rather. I think it was like 31-16. And the Bulls put me to shame on that. I'm proud of them. But they now welcome the 3-7 Tulsa Golden Hurricane to Tampa, so there's absolutely no reason for them to lose that game. They should go bowling because I do believe they're 5-5. So if you can handle Charlotte and you can compete with some of the teams you've competed with so far this year, you're bringing in a 3-7 Golden Hurricane. Come on, you should be able to take care of business there. And then some upsetting news here locally. UWF, unfortunately, fell to Valdosta State 28-7. Now, remember what I said about this game. I said if Valdosta State wins, it's not going to be some fluky result. It's not. It's not going to be some fluky what if, or, oh, it could have gone either way, or, oh, this jobbed us, or this screwed us over. No, it wasn't going to be anything like that. If Valdosta State was going to win this game, it was going to be no nonsense. They were just simply the better team, which was very well possible. They were at home. They were 9-0, top ranked. They won the game 28-7, as I said. And as I mentioned, you have to beat the Argos on the field. This is not a team that you're going to get one up on any other way. You have to be the better team, and Valdosta State clearly was, so congrats to them. Unfortunately, though, the loss ends UWF season at 7-3. A good team in a good year. It was just a brutal schedule. You know, you lost to North Alabama in like double overtime early. They had your number last year. That was a dagger. But then the losses to a high-ranking Grand Valley State, and now this one to Valdosta State. Oh, gosh. That's what's going to make you think what if. That's what's going to make you think it could have been different. That's what's going to make you think UWF might be better than we thought. May not be a title contender, but they could have maybe had a better record and maybe have made a stronger push. I don't know. It makes you think, but if ifs and buts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas. And yes, I am saying that because we are getting pretty close to Christmas time. Anyway, I'm rambling on this for too long. Congratulations, Argonauts. One heck of a season, as always. Alrighty, moving on to score predictions here, but before I do, I want to give you one last reminder. You can listen to the College Try podcast on ESPNPensacola.com's local podcast page. You can listen to the now 15 episodes of what I, Austin Price, have to say. And I think I say some pretty good stuff. But also, you can listen to some of our live programming on ESPN Pensacola itself, which is going to be on 99.1 FM, 1330 AM, and on the ESPN Pensacola mobile app. Alrighty, moving on here to the score predictions. Miami over Wake Forest, 49-17. And I know what you're thinking. Well, Austin, didn't you just say that Wake was going to put up some good points? Against high-ranking opposition, that is a good amount of points. They put up 14 against Clemson, put up 6 against Ole Miss. So if you can put up 17 against a top-10 Miami on the road with the Canes coming off a bye, I'll take it. Especially considering Wake has lost, what, 2 straight games, back-to-back games? I think they were 4-4, now they're 4-6, and yes, I'm pretty sad about it. Anyway, so I got Miami putting up a lot of points. Wake's going to put up a decent amount, all things considered, with how their season's been, but that doesn't get you very far. Number 9, Ole Miss, I have them beating Florida 34-21. And I think, as I said, it's a trap game Florida's not going to go down easy, but I think the Rebels are going to lock in for this playoff spot. I think they know they're backed up against the wall. They see that they're in this pool of two lost teams in the SEC. They know that they're a lower end playoff contender at this point. They've got to make an example out of this now hopeful Gator squad on the road. And who knows, maybe Florida's a little bit hungover. That win over LSU was huge. So maybe you catch them lacking. I don't know. I don't think the Gators are going to go down easy, though, but I do think Ole Miss pulls away 34-21. Florida State. Come on, man. You got to beat Charleston Southern, and you got to beat them bad. I have this being 41-7. I know it's hard to imagine that Florida State hits that many points against anyone, but a one-win Charleston Southern, that they've bombed, and their offense is no good. And while Florida State's defense needs some work, it's certainly better than their offense. So I think shutting them down to 7 points is certainly doable. But I have to assume the offense can catch some sort of rhythm. I want to believe that. So 41-7 is what I've penciled in. West Virginia, UCF. This is that game that I said could go either way. Morgantown, though, West Virginia having that home field advantage, and it's a respected one. And they're fighting for the bowl. I got to take West Virginia here. 30-23. Close game, good game, worth a watch if you come across it on your TV. But I got to take the Mountaineers there. And then here's a game that's not going to be very good. It's my weird score of the week. USF beating Tulsa 44-18. I was just feeling daring when I came up with that score. I don't know, it just felt right. But I've got USF winning big. That's all you need to know. And then I mentioned South Alabama earlier. Speaking of blowouts, I've got them winning against Southern Miss 48-10. USA's offense has kind of feasted on the weak all season. They made headlines early for dropping 87 on Northwestern State. But I'm not just talking about that. They've put up a lot of points in several games. The Golden Eagles, their blowout losses leave them looking doomed to join that club if you just want the truth. Alrighty. Now, some of the bigger games nationally. Number 2, Ohio State. Number 5, Indiana. This one has such large implications on just the playoff seeding and the Big Ten's representation, whether it be in the Big Ten title game or the playoff itself. Ohio State, I'm taking them to win. They've got the better talent on paper. They've got the longer tenured head coach. They're in Columbus. I can't turn against them when all of that is in their favor. I've got them beating Indiana 36-27, and I say it with such a bummed voice because not only does everyone want Indiana to do the best as possible, why wouldn't you? They're a great story. But I know this is going to be a dagger to Indiana's playoff argument. Not necessarily that they won't get in, but if you sit them down in the pool of the two-loss SEC teams and all of them are sitting at home for the conference title game weekend, you are going to be in a position where you're holding Indiana in their resume, which has already been criticized as so weak. You're going to be holding that next to everyone else, and that just... that scares me. I mean, to give you perspective, BYU went to SMU, a ranked SMU, and won. One loss, though it was a poor one. It was nonetheless just one loss, dropped them to 14th. Indiana's fifth. They don't have the win or wins that BYU has. They would have a much better quality loss, but they wouldn't have the wins. I could see Indiana taking a pretty steep tumble here and just being a make-or-break moment for their playoff run. So that's what's so upsetting to me. I've got Ohio State winning, though, 36-27. That's going to make it hurt all the more because it's going to be a competitive game, and I'm going to get on my soapbox in the weeks coming talking about how Indiana got jobbed when held next to Penn State, who's probably going to make it. So that's just a heartbreaker right there. I mentioned BYU just a moment ago, and I said early in this episode, you know what? BYU is going to have a chance to undo the wrongfulness that the committee just committed, because they go to Arizona State this weekend. Arizona State, number 21 in the country. This is your chance for redemption, and you're going to miss it. I think BYU loses 27-23, and I'm actually going to add a specification to this prediction. I've got BYU being down by more than a field goal costing them late in this game. That's going to be a dagger to them. They're maybe going to be trying to march, but they have to go for a touchdown, or they have to keep the drive alive. You know, they can't just settle for a field goal late. That's going to be on your mind late in this game. I don't know why I think that. I'm just trying to spruce it up here. I think that could very well be the case. BYU's a good team, and Arizona State's a good team, but they've both had their dips. But I've got Arizona State at home. They're darn good. They started out hot. They kind of fell out of relevance for a moment there, and now they're back, and they're at home, and they're firing up because now they're looking at, hey, if we beat BYU at home, we have a strong standing in the Big 12, and that means we have a playoff path. So Arizona State's going to come out swinging. So I've got them winning that game 27-23. Then we've got a neutral site game, Notre Dame, Army. This is in the Bronx, I think. Number 6 Notre Dame and number 19 Army. I've got Notre Dame winning 40-20. This is another one that bums me out because this is Notre Dame feeding on another smaller, hopeful story. And it's upsetting. Army's offensive attack, it's stalled in recent weeks. And though they're coming off a bye, I just see it continuing to struggle against a team with the physicality of the Fighting Irish. And I think, if you agree with me, but you're sad about it like I am, you can rest assured, these are the types of wins that's going to justify, quote-unquote, the Irish being in the playoff, and they're probably going to get spanked, you know, pretty early in the bracket like they always do. But, hey, that's a story for another day. Alrighty, 4 upset alerts here. This perhaps is the most we've had in a single episode. Number 13, SMU at Virginia. The Mustangs are riding high, of course, after back-to-back double-digit wins. They're holding a firm first-place spot in the ACC. No one had that on the bingo card. They now have to go on the road to a Cavs squad that was able to beat Pitt, and they're looking for a bowl. The Cavs are 5-5. Trap game. Number 4, Penn State at Minnesota. The Golden Gophers, they're a bowl team. They can put on a show at home. Minneapolis can be kind of difficult. So for them to host an unproven Nittany Lions squad right before their senior day against rival Maryland, that makes for quite the speed bump. I haven't seen much talk about this game, but that is a... Man, that one's tricky. PJ Fleck is tricky. His teams are tricky. At home, it's tricky. Look out for the Nittany Lions there. And when I say that, I mean, look out for their sake. Then we've got number 16, Colorado at Kansas. Man, I don't know what you want me to say. I mean, the Buffs are on cloud 9. They're really feeding into that Travis Hunter Heisman talk, feeding into that playoff path talk. They're seeing BYU crumble. They're thinking, oh, yeah, chances looking all the better. Well, now you're facing the team that just beat BYU, and you're going on the road to do it. If the Jayhawks can beat Iowa State and BYU, they're capable of beating the Buffs in Arrowhead. I refuse to believe otherwise. And I don't know how much this title means. It probably doesn't mean anything. But if I did have to give a crown to the best 4-6 team in the country, it would probably be Kansas. Do with that what you will, but that's what I think. And then the last one here, number 15, Texas A&M at Auburn. The Tigers have a loosened up offense, thanks to ULM. They got a brutal defense they have all year and an intimidating road environment. That's all in store for an Aggies team that's looking forward to hosting the Longhorns. Yeah. I can't, in a good conscience, just shrug off that game and think, oh, yeah, Texas A&M's got it. They're a good team. But all of those implications, looking ahead to a very important rivalry with SEC and playoff implications, Auburn is going to give you a scare physically. I don't see this being a very high-scoring game. I think Texas A&M will win, but it's an upset alert. I think Auburn kind of has the sirens blaring a bit. The Tigers may be caught looking ahead to rivalry week themselves. They got the Iron Bowl, but there's still room left for some unpredictability, and that's enough for me to stand by circling this one. You've been listening to the College Try Podcast, episode 15. We are so far into this season, I can't believe it. Once again, you can listen to this on the local podcast page on ESPNPensacola.com, and you can listen to ESPN Pensacola on 99.1 FM, 1330 AM, and on your ESPN Pensacola mobile app. We will see you next Wednesday. Have a good night.